good question. It requires some time to answer. Pante, you present Samma Samadhi as the culminating point, the final steps in the Eightfold Path. How would I reconcile this linearity with another circular way of seeing the path, that is, as a wheel with eight spokes inter-supporting one another? So, attaining jhana in the Noble Eightfold Path, in that in the circle is completing the circle. When you take a circle, you start from one point and end it. But in this, as you know, a circle is something that can go on and on and on. You cannot find a beginning or an end of a circle. Right? You just have to find a place to begin and come to that point to end. That's how you use a circle. In this case, we start perhaps with understanding and then end in concentration. Going round step by step, starting from understanding, ending at concentration, itself is not the whole practice. So you must go round and round and round many, 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 many times. It is just like a spiral. once you complete the circle and come to the end of the circle, in this case, right concentration, then you might wonder what you should do with concentration. That is not the end of everything. That is just like samsara. It is a beginning of next round. So when you gain good concentration, you should use that concentration to practice vipassana. So you need, as we ended in the fourth jhana, as you saw yesterday, the fourth jhana has qualities. Buddha has given eight qualities in the fourth jhana, which are not mentioned in the formula. But in the description, he has given eight qualities, and it goes like this in Pali. Evam parisuddhe pariyodate anangane vigatupakkilese mudubhute kammaniye thite ananjappatte. That is, parisuddha means pure, pariyodate means white, clean. Anangana is without a stain. Vigatupakkilesa means without any idiosyncrasies. Mudubhuta means soft. Kammaniya means pliable. Ananjappatta means imperturbable. These are the qualities of the eighth jhana, fourth jhana. Then, he said, with these qualities, with this powerful concentration, the meditator should begin the practice of vipassana. We may start with vipassana, end up in gaining concentration, and then use concentration again to practice vipassana in a more powerful way, with the greater strength of concentration, to practice vipassana even more effectively. What do we do in vipassana is focusing this concentrated mind on anything and everything that we experience. Form, feeling, perception, thoughts and consciousness, the five aggregates primarily. When we use concentration to practice vipassana, the mind becomes so powerful, so clear, that the meditator would not be biased, would not be so emotional, but mind remains equanimous, because in the fourth jhanic state there is equanimity. With that equanimous state of mind you practice vipassana. When we don't have those qualities of our concentration to practice vipassana, sometimes the meditator can become too emotional and make the practice counterproductive. For instance, there is a discourse called Kayagata Sati Sutta, the mindfulness of the body. When Buddha delivered this discourse, he went away. After delivering this discourse, he went for a retreat. You know, even the Buddha had retreats. 3 months retreat, 2 months retreat, 1 month retreat, half a month retreat, and so forth. Not only us. So when he went for his retreat, after delivering this sermon on mindfulness of the body, the bhikkhus started practicing mindfulness of the body. Then they saw what is called repulsiveness of the body. And since they were not very having a deep, clear, powerful, equanimous state of mind, when they saw the repulsiveness of the body, they became so disgusted with the body. Naturally, you get so disappointed, you get so upset, you even begin to feel that this body is totally, completely useless. That's what happened to these bhikkhus. They felt as if a dead human carcass hanging around their neck, day and night, because they had to leave this so-called repulsive body. And then one monk met a man called Migalandaka, and he asked him, Migalandaka, do me a little favor. I am so disgusted with this body, I don't want to live in this body anymore. Here is a straight razor, and you can get my robe, my arms bald, and sell in the market and get little money, but take this knife and cut my throat. because he did not want to live anymore. So this man, with a lot of hesitation, thought, well, he can get little money. So he cut his throat. And then he went, after that, this man, Vigalandaka, went from kuti to kuti, asking other bhikkhus, do you want to attain enlightenment very quickly? I can send you to enlightenment quickly. And those bhikkhus, who were very much disgusted with their body, agreed. They said, okay, come on, cut my throat. So he cut throat of 60 monks during these 3 months. So when Buddha returned from his retreat, he found the number has become thin. So he asked Venerable Ananda, Ananda, what happened? Then Ananda told him the reason. So then Buddha gave another sermon called Mindfulness of Breathing, Anapanasati Sutta. And he taught them that because of their foolishness, not having developed their concentration, not having developed their mind, and developed their equanimity, they look at the body lopsidedly. You know, in Satipatthana Sutta, there is a part called Patikula Manasikara, reflection of the various parts of the body. There, Buddha has given a simile, and he said, just like a man, there's a bag full of grains, wheat, barley, dal, moong dal, chickpeas, and wheat, and so forth and so on. And somebody with good eyesight opens the bag and looks inside and recognizes each grain. He does not say, I like barley, but I hate dal. He does not have that kind of emotional reaction. When he opens the bag, he sees the grain and identifies the grain without any emotional reaction. Similarly, when we look at the body, our own body, we have to look at the parts of the body without such emotional reaction. That can happen only when we have equanimity, which is an integral part of the fourth jhana, as you saw already. With good concentration, pure mind, the imperturbable mind, steady mind, soft mind, and so forth. And therefore, when we gain concentration, with that concentrated state of mind, we have to look at the body to see it exactly as it is. In order to see the impermanent nature of the body, an unsatisfactory nature of this body, and selfless nature of this body. And therefore, when you go through all these eight steps, when you come to last one, until we are established in this state of mind, we must go through it again and again and again and go one round, gain concentration, and if the concentration is not strong enough, go another round, and go another round, and so forth, until our concentration is very strong with the fourth jhana or even the first jhana. to practice vipassana more effectively. By the way, one doesn't actually have to wait until one reaches the fourth jhana to practice vipassana. Even from the first jhanic attainment, one can practice vipassana more effectively. Or one can start with the practice with vipassana and then gain jhana, as I mentioned the other day. That is called vipassana jhana. That means when you gain you can gain this kind of concentration from various things. So when we gain it from first jhana, when we attain the first jhana, we use that jhanic state to practice vipassana. Also, in order to avoid this kind of emotional reactions, sometimes people say that you attain jhanas and come out of jhana and then practice vipassana. That is not what we see or what really happens when we practice jhana and vipassana. When the mind is very clear and pure and concentrated, in that mind there is attention. And we use the attention, or attention directs the mind onto various parts of the body. Scanning, sort of scanning. And see every tiny little part very clearly. You know, when you come out of concentration, you don't have jhanic power, samadhi bala, samadhi indriya, concentration quality. You don't have it. The moment you come out of it, you don't have it. Sometimes people say, oh no, you don't need jhanic concentration, you need only excess concentration to practice vipassana. Access is not powerful enough, it is very weak. It is just like a child trying to stand up. Child's muscles are not strong, bone structure is not strong, so coordination of the movement is not possible, so the child cannot stand up and walk. Similarly, when you are in the excess state of concentration, your concentration is not powerful enough to see and focus on our various parts of the body. So when we have this concentrated mind, that mind must be focused on the path. That is why Buddha said, evam samahite citta parisuddhe pariyodate anangane vikutu pakkilese mudu bhute kammane tite ananjappatte asavakhe jnanaya cittam abininnameti. This concentrated mind is focused on the destruction of defilements, not coming. Focus the mind on the destruction of defilements after coming out of jhana. We never see that in the Buddha's explanation. While you are in that state, mind is so clear and pure, undisturbed. And that is the state, things becomes perfectly clear. With that state, you see, we can see any tiny little change that takes place in our body and mind. So, your question is, final step in the Eightfold Path, how would I reconcile this linearity with another circular way of seeing the path? That is, as the wheel with eight spokes. Now, it gives in a circle with the eight spokes because they are all interconnected. As I mentioned, concentration is supported by all other seven factors of the Noble Eightfold Path. And that means they all are interrelated, interconnected. You cannot take one out of them and practice the other. Or you practice seven and leave one out. But you go to practice all of them in order to complete the circle. This is what is called Dhamma circle, or cycle of Dhamma, as opposed to the cycle of Sansara. Sansara cycle has 12 spokes, Dhamma cycle has 8 spokes. In order to overcome Sansara cycle, we have to practice Dhamma cycle. Both are repetitive. Sansara cycle repeats itself again and again and again, so we have to repeat the Dhamma cycle in order to counter the Sansara cycle. They are inter-supporting naturally, and therefore it is perfect cycle. When I answer a question, if you have further questions related to the answer, please don't hesitate to ask. Okay? Yes. You know, becoming detached from the body is one thing, and hating the body is another. When you don't like certain things, there arises aversion. So we don't want to cultivate aversion by cultivating mindfulness of impurities. So this is called, I'm glad you asked me the question. This is called Patikula Manasikara. Patikula is the opposite of Anukula. You know the word Anukula. Anukula means going with the grain, going with the hair. Anukula. Patikula means going against the grain. Anukula is what you do, what everybody else does. Habitually you do certain things. Habitually you become attached to the body. Habitually you cling to the body and various parts of the body. This is going against that. That means you are looking at the body from a different perspective. Not to cultivate aversion or hatred, but to cultivate an understanding of how this body really is. Now, the word Patikula has been translated into, Buddha himself said it is asubha. Asubha means not subha, not pleasant. It doesn't mean that we should cultivate aversion or hatred towards the body. And that is what happened to those monks. Instead of understanding the meaning of Patikula, they cultivate an attitude of aversion towards the body. And that can lead to anger, hatred, and disgust, and end up their life the way they did. So there has to be a balance of using equanimity, equanimous attitude. There is a Indriya Bhavana discourse in Majjhima Nikaya, last discourse in Majjhima Nikaya. I advise you to read that discourse called Indriya Bhavana. There Buddha said, when you cultivate equanimity, when the things are disgusting or repulsive, in the repulsive objects, you will have equanimous attitude. Where there is a pleasant object, you can have equanimous attitude. So, that is the state of mind we have to cultivate by looking at the body, so that we will not become attached to it or averse to it.
Going to the cemetery and doing bhavana?
The same thing. Cemetery bhavana also is seeing the true nature with a mature attitude. Just like a scientist looking, inspecting human feces under microscope. When they look at human feces under microscope, they don't say this is ugly, this is dirty, this is this and that. They just as emotionally balanced people want to know the composition of this particular pieces. It's whatever they want to find, whether virus, germs, cancer, or whatever. They just want to find out that. Similarly, when we look at our body, we have to have that kind of attitude. So, to say that we are trying to cultivate repulsiveness of the body, that is not correct. Ordinary people get very much upset, especially in the West. When we talk about repulsiveness of the body, how many people like to hear that? Nobody wants to talk about the repulsiveness of the body. These people glorify this body. We spend billions and billions of dollars to maintain this body, to make it attractive. I don't want to go into that. Yes. So, to save time, okay? Can you please clarify if the word Dhamma in the second factor of enlightenment, Dhamma Vichaya Sambojjhanga, refers to the investigation of the Dhamma as in the doctrine or to the bodily and mental phenomena? Actually, in order to cultivate mindful enlightenment factor of Dhamma, we have to have we have to cultivate enlightenment factor of mindfulness first. With mindfulness, when we investigate, what do we investigate? We investigate the Dhamma means the phenomenon, the things that happens to the body and the mind. Say, factors of wholesome dhammas, unwholesome dhammas, the root of wholesome dhammas, root of unwholesome dhammas. What are the wholesome dhammas? What are the unwholesome dhammas? They are called wholesome kammas and unwholesome kammas. There are 10 unwholesome kammas, 10 wholesome kammas. And we had to investigate their roots. In Sammaditti Sutta, in Majjhima Nikaya, Sutta number 9, you can read that. The way how we develop our understanding, and there, although the word investigation of Dhamma is not mentioned, the entire description, explanation of right understanding is the explanation of investigation of Dhamma. That means we have to understand mindfully the nutriments, 4 types of food, and 4 noble truths, noble eightfold path, dependent origination, one by one, very meticulously, carefully, mindfully go through each and every one of them mentally. And they all are within ourselves. And that investigation is called mindful investigation of Dhamma. All these are Dhammas. For instance, we experience certain feelings. Then we must try to understand, how does this feeling arise? Does it arise by itself? Then we will see, feeling does not arise by itself. There has to be some cause, conditions, factors. One is contact. What kind of contact? The impingement contact or designation contact. What is the impingement contact? What is the designation contact? And so forth. The contact that we get through our senses is designation contact. Contact that the mind makes through all these things is called impingement contact, because these are the eventually the contact is, contact takes place because of the mental contact. So forth, we go into various levels of occurrences of these phenomena. That is what is called investigation of Dhamma. For, to do that, we have to have mindfulness first. So, investigation of Dhamma is any mental phenomena, any physical phenomena that we experience, we investigate mindfully to see how they happen. Their roots, their causes, their conditions, how they arise, how they pass away, and so forth. Looking at all of them in the framework of 4 Noble Truths and Noble Eightfold Path and dependent origination. Any question related to that? If not, I go to the next question. Is it the way to be reborn in the Brahma realm? Where are we? What is the ultimate goal of attaining the 4th jhana? That is the question. So, the elaboration of the question is it the way to be reborn in the Brahma realms, where we can continue to learn the Buddha's teachings in order to attain the stream entry up to the Arahant level. The practice of jhanas, I think this is a very good question, because when we practice jhana and do not do anything with the jhana and die, then you will be reborn in Brahma realm. That is not what we want to do. And that is why Buddha abandoned his teachers. All his previous teachers had jhanas. And he said, my teachers have faith, perseverance, concentration, wisdom, and mindfulness. And yet they have not liberated themselves from samsara. Why? Because they stuck with jhanas, attained the highest immaterial jhanas. Attaining jhanas and staying there is not the purpose, but using that jhanas to practice vipassana in order to remove our defilements, fetters. So the purpose is not to just to be born in the Brahma realms. And also the practice of jhana is to liberate ourselves from fetters and psychic irritants and entering into supramundane noble eightfold path. Now, what is the supramundane noble eightfold path? This is it takes quite a while to explain this. When we practice Noble Eightfold Path, which understanding to some extent, and without removing any of our psychic irritants totally, completely from our mind, we will be practicing Monday Noble Eightfold Path. But when we practice the Noble Eightfold Path, the moment we are able to overcome underlying tendencies of our pleasant, our feelings, pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, neutral feeling, and so forth. Underlying tendency of pleasant feeling is greed. Underlying tendency of unpleasant feeling is disappointment or anger, hatred. Underlying tendency of delusion, neutral feeling is delusion. So the moment we are able to remove these underlying tendencies of these things, we enter the supramundane noble eightfold path. So one day Buddha asked Venerable Sariputta, Soto soto ti uchati. Kimpana Sariputta soto. What is sota? Sota, sota, we talk about sota, sota, sota. What do you mean by sota? He says sota means the supramundane Noble Eightfold Path. And one who enters the supramundane Noble Eightfold Path is called Sotapanna. Only there in Saṅyutta Nikāya you can see this description. Only those who enter the supramundane Noble Eightfold Path is called Sotapanna. Anyway, the practice of jhana is to enter the supramundane Noble Eightfold Path, to eliminate, by practicing supramundane Noble Eightfold Path, we eliminate numerous psychic irritants, primarily belief in permanent eternal substance in us, doubt and belief in attaining liberation by practicing rituals, rites and rituals. These are the three primary fetters we remove from the mind. So, attaining jhana is to use that to practice Noble Eightfold Path to remove these defilements. The next question is, when we reach the fourth jhana, due to the purity of mindfulness, can we reach the stream entry, Sotapatti, faster than the yogi who practices only vipassana without jhana? Friends, at the attainment of Sotapanna state, Sotapanna attainment, you have to have jhana. Sotapanna attainment is the jhanic attainment. You cannot say that you can attain Sotapanna without jhana. You may practice vipassana without jhana, but when you enter the Sotapanna level, Sotapanna stage, you enter that level with jhana or in jhana, because you need that kind of concentration to penetrate the anicca dukkha anatta. As Buddha repeatedly said in many thousands of places, samahitam cittam yathabhutam pajanati, concentrated mind sees things as they really are. So we have to have that kind of concentration, at least first jhanic concentration, in order to see things as they really are. Vipassana's objective of vipassana is seeing things as they really are. To see things as they really are, we have to have jhanic samadhi concentration. So, you cannot say that you practice vipassana without any, practice vipassana and attain Sotapanna stage without jhana. You cannot say that. You can practice vipassana, you may come out of vipassana without jhana, but you cannot attain even Sotapanna stage only by practicing vipassana without jhana. Because, as I said, jhana is the culmination of the practice of the Noble Eightfold Path. If you eliminate jhana's concentration, you would practice not Noble Eightfold Path, but Noble Sevenfold Path. Noble Eightfold Path is the complete path. Sevenfold Path is one step short of the Eightfold Path. And Buddha did not present the Noble Eightfold Path as a joke. He was very serious. He knew what he was talking about. And we can see the logical way of presenting it, and how we each and every step links or connects with the other steps. And therefore, all of them we must practice. I totally disagree with anybody who says we can practice vipassana and attain. Some people say all you need what you call khanika samadhi, momentary concentration. What is momentary concentration? When you have full concentration, only then you can see a moment. Momentary concentration does not mean that you have concentration at this moment and don't have concentration next moment. Momentary concentration is the concentration that you, after developing full concentration, you would be able to see moments. Otherwise, you cannot see moments. You go through moments, so moments are so quick, as I mentioned, they happen so in such a inconceivable rapidity that you cannot conceive a moment. As you all know, even the five aggregates, mentally you can describe five aggregates. You can write about it, talk about it. Can you separate them? You cannot separate. They all come together, happen together. Now, if that is so difficult to separate, how more difficult it is to see a moment. Quantum physicists have defined a moment. They say one moment is 1 billionth of a billionth of a second. So, what kind of concentration it is? How can you use that kind of concentration? This leads to another thing that I want to say, but I have no time for that. That is the attainment of Magga-phala, the path state and fruition state. This momentary concentration thing has been introduced by commentators to describe the attainment of if anybody is interested, perhaps you can later on ask me questions. If we have time, we can discuss this little bit. Yeah. You can attain Sotapanna according to Attaka Nagara Sutta. There's a beautiful sutta in Majjhima Nikaya called Attaka Nagara Sutta. There, Venerable Ananda has explained how one can attain stream entry and so forth by following jhanas. And the minimum qualification he mentioned there is first jhana. Even if you have first jhana, you can attain stream entry and so forth. But without any jhana, the attainment is not possible. The second, third, fourth, higher the jhanas, quicker and easier for gaining Magga-phala. Next question, after attaining the fourth jhana, which quality of the mind to be used in order to develop psychic powers? Okay. After attaining the fourth jhana, all the qualities in the fourth jhana are important to develop psychic powers. Because in the fourth jhana you have pliability, softness, steadiness, imperturbability and so forth, and purity, concentration and equanimity, and all these things are equally important to cultivate psychic powers. And that is why the psychic power, development of psychic powers have been mentioned only after the fourth jhana, because the fourth jhana, all the fourth jhana qualities are equally important for that attainment. So friends, that ends the series of questions that you have asked. If you have any other questions, yes.
Can you describe the different resting points on the way to Nibbana? I get a sense, but I'm not sure of the full roadmap to Nibbana.
I think that is what we call four stages of enlightenment: Sotapanna, Sakadagami, Anagami, Arahant. Four stages. According to commentaries and even Abhidhamma description, difference between the path stage and fruition stage is only one thought moment. That is the 1 billionth of a billionth of a second. That you will never find. I mean, this is one stage, attaining Sotapanna, Sakadagami, Anagami, Arahant. Sotapanna means stream entry, as I mentioned earlier. Stream entry means entering the stream of the noble, supramundane noble eightfold path. It has two levels. One is the path level and the other is fruition level. When you attain the fruition level, you have destroyed three what you call fetters. They are called belief in the permanent eternal self, doubt, and belief in attainment of liberation by following rites and rituals. These three are called fetters. When you destroy all the three, you are in the first level of supramundane attainment, that is Sotapanna, fruition stage. When you destroy, when you weaken two other fetters like greed and hatred, kama chanda vyapada, you just weaken, you are in the second level of supramundane attainment, that is called once returners level, fruition. Then when you destroy these two, greed and hatred, you are in the third level of supramundane attainment. That's called never returners. Then there are five other fetters called desire for fine material existence, desire for immaterial existence, conceit, restlessness and worry, and ignorance. These are five. These five are called subtle fetters. First five are called gross fetters. So when you have destroyed all the last five fetters, you are in the Arahanthood fruition stage, and that is enlightenment. Now, having said that, I want to start with something controversial Perhaps some of you may have read this one moment different between path state and fruition state. That's what normally people have understood. But you can never find anything to substantiate this description from the sutras. For instance, there is a discourse called Dakkhina Vibhanga Sutra. That means analysis of the different levels of merits that you gain by making offerings to various individuals. The scale of merits you gain by offering things to certain individuals. Individuals are individuals, not one thought moment. In the description of the Sangha, Buddha said there are four pairs and eight individuals. Chattari purusa yugani atta purusa puggala. Chattani purusa yugani atta purusa puggala. Four pairs of individuals and four pairs of persons and eight individuals. These eight individuals are those who are in the path stage of Sotapanna, Sotapanna fruition stage, to once returned as path stage, once returned as fruition stage, never returns path stage, never returns fruition stage, and Arahant path stage, Arahant fruition stage. Eight. Now, suppose you want to make an offering to someone who is in the stream entry path stage. Can you find one if the path and fruition differentiate by only one fraction of a second? You never find such person. It is just a word, because such person never exists. If the difference between path and fruition is only one billionth of a billionth of a second, you never find. So, Buddha said, one who enters the path, he said, so maggam bhaveti bahuli karoti. Once you enter the path, he practices it, cultivates it, develops it before he attains the fruition stage. You have no time to do that if it is only one fraction of a second difference. So, one who is on the path stage is a very distinct individual who is preparing, practicing, developing the path to attain the fruition stage. Then you have two individuals. So those who are attaining the highest level of enlightenment are eight in number. Only then one can make an offering to those individuals separately. What I have been explaining is when you practice Noble Eightfold Path very diligently, it becomes so clear in your mind that if you are a faith-oriented person, you develop confidence, faith, because of the path is so clear. it becomes clearer and clearer and clearer and clearer as you keep practicing it. Then you develop confidence. When you develop confidence, your faith, your doubt will disappear. Not intellectually, but experientially, you will have no doubt whatsoever with regard to the Noble Eightfold Path. That moment, you enter the stream entry path. And then you keep practicing and practicing and practicing the Noble Eightfold Path. Then, you also begin to see, well, this is it. This is what I have to practice. Not the rites and rituals. Not rites and rituals. This is what I have to practice. And still you are in the stream entry path. When conviction occurs, you are convinced that this is what you have to follow, then you give up the belief that you can attain liberation by following rites and rituals, will vanish from your mind. Still you are in the stream entry path. The moment your mind is liberated from the permanent, eternal, everlasting self, notion of permanent, eternal, everlasting self, because it is not something that existing permanently. That time you enter the stream entry fruition stage. So when you attain the fruition stage, you have already destroyed 3 defilements. So first 2 you destroy while you are in the path stage. When you attain the fruition stage, you destroy all the 3. Then we have greed and hatred. When you weaken your greed, you are in a path stage of the once returner. When you weaken hatred, then you are in the fruition stage of the once returner. Then when you destroy greed, you are in the past stage of never returner. And when you destroy hatred, you are in the fruition stage of the never returner. Similarly, when you destroy the desire for fine material existence, desire for non-material existence, restlessness and worry, and conceit, you are, when you have destroyed these 4, you are in the path stage of Arahanthood. When you destroy ignorance, you are in the full Arahantship fruition stage. This is how it happens. Stage by stage, gradually, this is called gradual training. Nothing happens all of a sudden. So, these are the stages of attaining enlightenment. Yeah. Yep. 2 hands. What is yours?
This, you explained after, how to enter the stream entry.
Mm-hmm.
So, after getting 4th jhana or some 1st jhana, then they, from there to entering state, the next step is actually get sadda or faith.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a very small step, it seems.
Yes. You gain that confidence because you have seen the path so clearly with the purity of mindfulness, with equanimity, and all this, you are full confident. Very, of course, it appears to be a very short step. To describe it is very short. But attainment is not that short. What is your question? No, that ignorance is the ignorance of Four Noble Truths. Always, whenever we define ignorance, ignorance means ignorance of Four Noble Truths. And that is the stage Four Noble Truths becomes perfectly clear and no doubt whatsoever, and your ignorance of it is completely gone. And Buddha defined it, dukkhe anjanam dukkhe. Avijja, when he described avijja, he said dukkha anjanam, dukkha samudaya anjanam, dukkha nirodaya anjanam, dukkha nirodhagamini patipadaya anjanam avijja. Ignorance means ignorance of suffering, cause of suffering, end of suffering, and the path leading to the end of suffering. That's ignorance. Yes. Destroy one of the three, until Arahanchit there still will be ahankara, my eye making. Ahankara means eye making feeling, because desire still is there, ignorance is still there. Ignorance is destroyed when you attain Arahanthood. Until such time, the residual I still exists. But not, that is what is called Ahankara. Will exist in a very mild form until you attain Arahanthood. It goes away when ignorance is gone.
That is a permanent self-concept goes
gone
in the first state.
Right. But still you will have I consciousness. Still you will have. You know, when we say one-pointedness of mind, that is the time mind becomes pure and clear. What do you call right thought is the thought of letting go. That means you are not thinking of letting go. Letting go happens in your mind, becomes so almost immune at that time for greed to stay. It, as I mentioned, like its mind becomes like a duck's back, where when you pour water, it simply rolls down and doesn't stay. So mind becomes so pure and clean that we call thought of letting go appears. Compassion is there, and friendliness, you know, metta is there. Now, they don't exist in as a form of thought, but as form of action, they stay there in the mind. That means your mind is so clean that there's no scruple of hatred, greed, or thought of cruelty in the mind.
But you don't feel.
You feel. I mean, your feeling and perception ceases only when you attain Nirodha Samapatti. Only in the Nirodha Samapatti stage, you don't have any feelings. That is called sanya vedeta nirodha. Until you attain sanya vedeta nirodha, you have a very subtle feeling of in lower jhanas you have the joy, happiness, concentration. In the highest jhana you have equanimity, equanimous state. So you feel the balance of the factors in the fourth jhana.
Those are chaitasikas.
They are chaitasikas. There are 16 chaitasikas in the first. You see, I think very good if you read Anupada Sutta, Sutta number 111 or Majjhima Nikaya. Anupada Sutta. There Buddha has listed the kind of thoughts you have in the mind when you attain four jhanas. Even in the fine material jhanas. When he was explaining Venerable Sariputta's attainment of enlightenment, he gave the list of things that exist in our mind. I think sometimes with when we understand the deep meaning of the Noble Eightfold Path, we don't see there could be anything else that can lead us to enlightenment. That means the purity of mind, clarity of mind, deep concentration, wisdom. There we have faith, we have spiritual faculties, everything is there. Therefore, for spiritual attainment, that is the way.
So your answer is yes.
Eh?
Your answer is yes.
Yeah. What do you say?
That day, why did you have to do that path through meditation? Why couldn't you do it by using your life as a laboratory and getting your faith that way? That and your confidence that it works. For instance, let's say greed. If you found that greed had consequences that you did not like, that were not good, then you would determine not to practice greed. You would know it. You know, be very mindful when the greed arose, and you would withdraw from it, and gradually. Then you wouldn't have any repercussions from it. And gradually that would become a part of you. Not to practice that. Why couldn't you eliminate all your hindrances that way rather than through meditation?
You know, that is a meditation. When you see the rational, intellectual way of reducing or eliminating your greed, that insight you gain from your thinking. You think and think and thinking. When you think of it, that is what we call investigation of the Dhamma. That's a meditation. You know, meditation does not mean just sitting on a cushion and focusing mind on the breath, or letting things happen and watching them. Meditation means anything that we do to see our state of mind. Sometimes we go to think. We think and think and think, and see the pros and cons of what is happening. And then we decide. There's a very beautiful discourse Buddha delivered. It's called Dvaita Vitakka Sutta, also in Majjhima Nikaya. In that sutta he said, before his attainment of enlightenment, he put all his thoughts into two categories. One wholesome, one unwholesome. Then when he kept on thinking, when I have these unwholesome thoughts, it hurts me, it hurts others, it hurts both, and I should not cultivate this. So he began to, he went on thinking. Then he looked at the wholesome thoughts. He said, when I have these thoughts, it makes me peaceful, make others peaceful, make both peaceful, therefore let me cultivate it. And he said, whatever you keep thinking, cultivating over and over again, that becomes your habit. And that habit is the wholesome or unwholesome. So naturally we want to cultivate wholesome habit in order to get rid of unwholesome things. So that is a meditation.
Well, if you do meditation that way, what happens to the jhanas? Where do they come in?
Then what happens? Your mind becomes so calm, so peaceful. You know, you can attain jhanas in many ways. By listening to Dhamma talk, your mind is very active. And yet, you are so concentrated. Thoughts are going through your mind. And still you are so concentrated, so devoted. You become full of joy, happiness, and you gain concentration. While listening to a talk, Dhamma talk. And in Anguttara Nikaya there are five ways of attaining jhanas and attaining enlightenment. One is listening. And the other is teaching. While teaching Dhamma to others, you become so deeply involved in your own understanding of Dhamma, and you become so full of joy, happiness, concentration, even while teaching. You gain concentration and jhana and attain enlightenment. And reading a profound Dhamma book, you do the same thing. Investigating Dhamma, you gain concentration. And the last thing is sitting and meditating, focusing mind on one object or many objects. These are the five ways of attaining enlightenment through jhanas. You get first jhana, you attain enlightenment. Where does Nirodha Samapatti fit in this ladder of concentration? Nirodha Samapatti, I mentioned there are eight jhanas. Four material jhanas, four immaterial jhanas. They are called four. some jhanas are called first four jhanas are called material jhanas because the object of those jhanas are material object, the breath, the signs, colors, and so forth. All are material, and therefore these jhanas are called material jhanas. Then there are another set of jhanas called immaterial jhanas, which are all concepts, perceptions. These are immaterial, and therefore they are called immaterial jhanas. When you attain the highest immaterial jhana, it is called neither perception nor non-perception, where the mind is, indescribably clear, pure, powerful. And then, at that level, especially at that level, you got to overcome your greed and hatred at that level in order to attain Nirodha Samapatti. Nirodha Samapatti means attaining the stage where your feeling and perception, sanya vedana, feeling and perception cease. That is the stage where you don't have feelings at all. You even don't have breathing. You are just like this polar bear, hibernating. You don't feel anything, you don't have perceptions, you don't have even breathing stops. And that attainment is called Nirodha Samapatti. Only according to some commentaries, only those who have attained never returners stage of enlightenment can attain Nirodha Samapatti. Why is that? Because when you are in the never returner stage, your greed and hatred are already destroyed. So long as you have greed, you cannot attain Nirodha Samapatti because you have to stop your desire for life, your feelings. If you don't have destroyed these things, then you, with the desire, you cannot attain it because you have an attachment. You got to let go of all your attachment to attain Nirodha Samapatti, cessation of perceptions and feelings. Because in Chula Vedala Sutta, Sister Dhammadinna asked Visakha, what is the difference between dead person and person who has attained Nirodha Samapatti? Because the dead person also doesn't have feelings, no perceptions, no breathing. So what is the difference? Difference is, the one who is in the Nirodha Samapatti still has his life continuum, jivitindriya. It is not gone. Body heat is still there. Although the metabolism is so slow that the person may not feel hungry, thirst and so forth, but perceptions and feelings, even breathing, is gone. The difference between dead and this person is that the one who attains the Nirodha Samapatti still has life continuum. So, sometimes when you meditate, you lost the feeling of breath. You feel that there is no breath. Some people become so panicky at that time, I'm going to die. I don't have feeling. I don't have breath. Just imagine when you are going to go into Nirodha Samapatti, where even your breath ceases. If you have a desire, how, you know, terrible it is. Therefore, you have to overcome or get rid of your desire before you attain the perceptions and what you call the perception, the cessation of perceptions and feelings.
I hear the gestalt of what you've been saying. It seems that on the way to perfection, one needs to tackle, you know, the hindrances of greed, desire, hatred, attachment, which, in my tradition, they call them as the tentacles of the ego, kama, krodha, lobha, moha, vikara, avarna. It seems to me, in some sense, the ego is the veil that kind of blocks us and comes in the way, and that's slowly being removed, peeled out.
Yeah.
And I guess there are subtle levels of that onion peeling
right.
that occurs until there's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Am I following it correctly?
Right. You know, I don't know whether you have seen our website. In the website, we put a very beautiful chart. In fact, I brought it here. We didn't have time to show it. And today we don't have a projector. In that chart, we drew a picture. Hindrances are on the top. That is what we remove when we attain jhanas. It is just like cutting or removing bamboo plants. You know, bamboo, when you want to... I remember one of our monastics planted a bamboo plant right behind my window. And I said, don't plant any bamboo here, because it will grow in such a large size that it will block my view. He said, no, don't worry about it, it won't grow. So in 1 year, it grew and multiplied. Actually, it blocked my view. Then I said, see, this is what I told you. Now remove it. So he removed them. He dug and removed all of them. Then he said, it's okay, no more. 2 weeks later, 10 of them appeared again. Then I said, see, then he felt so guilty and took a digging bar and a hoe and so forth and removed. And then he said, all clean, now you don't worry about it. Four weeks later, 10, 15 of them arose from here and there. Then he felt guilty, so he called a bulldozer. He came and dug and dug and dug and removed. Then the whole place was messy, and they said, no more bamboo, you don't have to worry about it. 2 months later, 3 of them came up. Then there was a man, a Cuban man. He took a big, digging bar and went on digging, and he removed this big, this long root. And he said, all gone. 3 months later, one more rose. So, this is the nature of bamboo. So, removing the top layers of bamboo shoots, bamboo plants, is just like removing hindrances. When you attain jhanas, you subside them, temporarily remove them. But the roots are still there. Roots are fetters. When you practice vipassana, you go to the root and remove every one of them without leaving one single piece. Then you will never see bamboo again. So that you can see the hindrances are the offshoot of fetters. Fetters are deeply rooted. They are called fetters because they bind you to samsara. So only through vipassana, insight, you can remove the root, go underground. For samatha or jhanas, you remove the top layer. So in the attainment of enlightenment, we use the jhana to take care of the, you know, top ones, and then go into the root through using vipassana, mindfulness. Excuse me? Yes.
Samatha,
when you use the laser, actually vipassana is like eye, because it sees, and samatha is like laser, and mindfulness is like the hand. So you have to have a very steady hand to use the laser to burn little cataract. Otherwise you will burn everywhere. So the concentration is like laser. Mindfulness is like our eyes. What you call vipassana is like our eyes. And mindfulness is like our steady hand. And Buddha gave very beautiful simile in another discourse, where he said, assume there is a city with six gates, and a pair of messengers come through each gate into the center or crossroad of the city, where the prince is sitting. This pair of messengers come and deliver a message and return by the same way they came in. The prince sitting in the center is consciousness. The six doors are our six senses. A pair of messengers coming through these six senses are samatha vipassana. That means we can use eye to practice samatha or vipassana, ear, samatha and vipassana, and so forth. And the path they follow to come in and go out are the Noble Eightfold Path. The message they deliver is Nibbana. So, you can see the connection between samatha, vipassana, and Noble Eightfold Path, a consciousness, and six senses, and so forth. So all these we can use to practice vipassana and samatha. Yes. Pirit? Are you all familiar with the term pirit? No. Pirit is a Singlish word for parit. The Pali word is parit. Means protective discourses. Discourses that we chant to protect people from various evil effects of evil demons, ghosts, goblins, planetary evil effects, and all these things.